This is KQEN Local Talk at 4. Every weekday, News Radio 1240 KQEN brings you local information at 4 o'clock. Now, the Mike Winters Lawn and Garden Show from Wintergreen Nursery Landscaping and Florist. Here's the Commissioner of Dirt, Mike Winters, and the Mike Winters Lawn and Garden Show on News Radio 1240 KQEN.
Ah, it's 406, and what'd you say it was, 81?
Yeah, I was out in your parking lot there, not 91 or whatever you guys predicted, for crying out loud.
I don't remember what we said.
Yeah, I do.
I take the fifth. I don't remember.
Yeah, you want to debate that?
Yeah. Shut up. You're wrong.
Oh, well, this is a gardening show. Well, thank you for listening, and keep listening. It's going to be okay. We'll settle down here in a minute. And if you have any questions, no matter what I'm speaking about, you can interrupt with your own question. It's okay. Call 673-4464, and we'll get you right in and answer your question, or at least attempt to answer your question. 99.9% of the time I'm right, though, okay? So I learned that from some other radio guy.
You can't go wrong there.
Yeah, I know. Anyway, today I'm going to talk about fruit trees. I don't talk about fruit trees much. And with fall coming on, and, you know, there's a lot of fall planting, and people, as it actually rains a little bit more and the ground gets softer and the leaves fall off,
It will.
Yeah, I know it will. But there's actually a lot of planting activity in, October, November, and clear into December if it's not, 2 feet of snow or something, Snowmageddon thingy. But it's a great time, of course, to plant anything. But, if you're looking for a fruit tree or even a shade tree, but I'm going to talk about fruit trees today, that's a great time to plant. You kind of look now and say, well, is my yard big enough, number one, to handle a fruit tree or half a dozen fruit trees or, what kind, what do you like? And then just bop around to different nurseries and, Wintergreen is a nice place to bop. And, take a look and see what's there and what's available and, get started if you've never done that before. One of the easiest and best fruit trees is an apple tree. Apple trees seem to survive no matter how bad you treat them. and I've done that on purpose. I've planted apple trees. Well, my son planted two apple trees way up on this ridge above my house. It's probably, 1,000 feet from the house, up on a ridge and in amongst a Madrone forest. And I said, what did you do that for? He said, for the deer to have some apples to eat. And I said, okay.
Well, that was kind of.
Yeah, he was real kind. But, strange as it may seem, the deer have not damaged those trees. They're not protected. They're just planted out amongst the wild stuff. And they've grown. And, I think last year, a year ago, I brought 10 gallons of water up there in my Kubota to water them. But that's the only time I've ever watered them. And my son, I think, did it one or two times over the last few years. And they're still alive and they still grow. And they're
hanging
still
in there. They're
hanging there. I mean, apple trees got to be the toughest trees in the world. And so if apple, and apples are popular. I mean, it's like, I don't know what kind of fruit sells more or which one is more popular, whether it's bananas or pineapples or apples. But
seems like there's a more variety of apples.
I think I counted, I think I wrote it down here in my notes about how many varieties of apples.
Speaking of variety, we got a phone call.
Already? Oh, my goodness. I haven't even said anything. Hi.
Hey, you're on the air with Mike Winters.
Hi, Mike.
Hello.
I don't have any fruit trees, but I do have a question about pampas grass.
Oh, boy. Okay.
I've got the dwarf pampas grass, and it's got those real nice flower plumes on there. Am I supposed to cut those back in the fall? None of my neighbors seem to ever prune theirs.
Well, you can or you cannot. I mean, it doesn't matter if it's, if you want to use them as a house decoration, put them in a vase or a container or some place in the house, because they're still pretty, they're still blooming, that's good. But you won't hurt the plant. You can't hurt pampas grass. I've cut pampas grass down to the ground with chainsaws, and they come back the next year like you fertilized them 28 times. I mean, they're one of the toughest plants I know of. So there's no damage. Yeah. There's no damage to a pampas grass when you prune it or cut the flowers.
But what if you leave them on, like, year round or something?
Well, they just die naturally, and the weather turns to super rain or bitter cold or something like that, the flowers just fade away and break off and fall down to the ground. That's it, and it doesn't hurt the plant. I mean, that's the natural cycle of things.
Well, if you leave the plumes on, will that mean you get less new ones next spring?
Oh, no, not with a pampas grass. You probably get twice as many, for crying out loud. I mean, they're an amazing grass. You got to be careful. And I tell people when they come into the nursery to buy a pampas grass, you make sure it has a lot of space, and make sure you really want it, because once you plant it, that thing is gonna anchor in and grow for the next, 50 years at least. And I've seen some very, very large pampas grass. One I saw in Camas Valley one day here a year or so ago, it was probably 10 feet high, and then the plumes were about 3 feet above that. And
wow.
And then the from tip to tip all the way around, it must have been 15 feet across. It was
amazing.
It was totally amazing. It had been there for years and years and years. And, you know, they're just probably one of the toughest plants I know of.
I'm glad I had the dwarf ones.
Yeah, okay. You know, many years ago, there was a gentleman that wanted to get rid of the pampas grass he had on his fence line. And he said, "What do I do about it?" And this is when I was a rookie, way back when. And I said, "Well, just just cut them down to the ground and put some diesel on them and burn them out this winter." And he said, "Oh, okay." So he did. He cut them to the ground, and then he soaked them with diesel and lit them on fire in December or something. And I happened to be going by on the day that he was burning, and the flames were shooting in the air, and there was a whole line of them, maybe 20 of them, and he had 20 fires going all at the same time. And it was out in the boondocks. There was no danger or anything. But I thought, well, there, you took my advice. That's great. Well, the following spring, about May, he came in to see me again. He says, "Guess what?" And I said, "What's that?" He says, "My pampas grass is growing back." He says, it looks better than it ever have. It's greener and it's more beautiful. And I said, "You burned it. I saw it." He says, "Yeah, I burned it down as far as I could and added more fuel to the fire. And I thought I had done it." But that's how tough a pampas grass is. You cannot hurt them.
So you'd say they're hardy.
Yes. They're in the hardy category.
Thanks a lot, Mike. I appreciate it.
Oh, you're sure welcome. Thank you for the call.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
All righty. It does sound like a hardy piece of grass.
Oh, it is. It is. You don't. And, it looks, it's different. It's neat and in the right place. It looks good. But if you ever grab one, grab one of the leaves, it'll cut you to ribbons.
Yeah. I was going to ask you about that.
Yeah. They're sharper than a razor blade, for crying out loud.
Yep.
And, way back when I was, a rookie, I picked one up by the, it was in a planting pot, and I picked it up by the leaves. Yeah, it sliced about three fingers, I learned real quick.
It's worse than a paper cut.
I didn't have to do it twice.
No. Learned right away.
Yeah. Anyway, back.
Oh, we got a phone call.
Another phone call. All right.
All right, let me get you set up here. And whoa.
What happened there?
You can turn the radio down a bit, and we'll get you on the air.
I did.
Okay, thank you.
I just wanted to comment. Well, I want to ask a question, but I wanted to comment too. My brother has several big pampas grasses, and he burns them every year down in February, and they always come back just beautiful.
Yeah, they're an amazing plant.
Yeah, I need to know, how soon can I begin to prune my fruit trees?
Okay, are they very large or small or what?
No, they're not. Most of them, I think, are semi-dwarf.
Uh-huh.
And I know that you're supposed to spray them in the fall. or early winter, and mine have leaves on them clear to the 1st of January, and I don't want to spray a bunch of leaves I don't need to.
As far as pruning, when it's pretty well, I'd say anytime in November to February, you can do the pruning. And then when all the leaves are off, of course, then you can do the spraying with like a dormant spray. And don't waste the spray on a bunch of leaves, you know, just hit the stems and get that really well. But
yeah, so I thought maybe I could prune them and get rid of most of the leaves that way. Then
yep.
I could spray them.
Yep, yep. But don't spray them prematurely. Wait till they go totally dormant, and with a dormant spray. There are other sprays that could be used out there, but I would educate myself first on what you wanted to achieve with your spraying, and just go from there.
Well, I've never really sprayed them in the fall because of the fact that the leaves stay on so long, and
sure.
So I thought, well, maybe I can prune them.
Yep.
Earlier this year instead of waiting until February.
Yeah, you're not gonna hurt them by pruning them even now. I mean, but
right.
I always recommend that just wait till the leaves fall off and they're totally dormant, and then you can prune to your heart's content. But I prune stuff year round, and it just depends on how much you take off and at what stage of the game it is.
Yeah. Okay. All right. Well, I'll prune them a little earlier this year.
Okay.
Thank you so much.
You're sure welcome. Thank you for the call.
Thank you.
Bye.
Well, shall we take a first break so I don't have to interrupt you?
Either that or another phone call, whatever.
Yeah. So far, no more phone calls.
Yeah, we'll take a break.
What's the number?
My number?
No, the phone.
The number is 673-4464.
Thank you. We'll be right back with more of Mike Winter's Lawn and Garden Show on the last day of September of 2020 at News Radio.
Oh, last day?
Of September.
Oh, man.
Yeah. On News Radio 1240 KQEN.
This is KQEN Local Talk at 4 on News Radio 1240 KQEN.
We're just sitting here telling each other to shut up.
Yeah, political style.
Yeah, we're back. Mike Winter's Lawn and Garden Show, News Radio 1240 KQEN.
Yeah.
Lines are still open if you got any questions.
Yeah, 673-4464, you keep asking me questions. I don't have to refer to any of my notes, and I can use the same notes for next week.
Same story next week.
Yeah, right. Anyway, I was going to talk about fruit trees, and one gentleman called about fruit trees already. That was pretty cool. And but like I said earlier, one of the easiest and best fruit trees to grow is an apple tree. Everybody loves apples, it seems. And if you want to try growing fruit and you never had a fruit tree in your yard, apples are a great tree for the first try, because very seldom do they fail. Even if you don't do it quite right, they'll grow in spite of you, not because of you. And they're just a cool tree. And they're adaptable to most any climate, from the desert to the mountains to the coast. They grow just about anywhere. My father-in-law lived in the high desert down in below Susanville, California. And he had some of the best apple trees in the whole place. And it froze and it snowed. It was over 4,000 foot elevation. And it snowed every year and it froze every year for weeks at a time. And his apples came back, year after year after year. And what are you looking at me like that for?
We got a phone call.
A phone call. All right. I'm ready.
All right. You're on with Mike Winters, Lawn and Garden Show. Hello? Yeah.
Hi. My
there
name
you are.
Is, Crystal. Can you hear me?
Yeah, now I can hear you.
Sorry. There we go. I was calling because a year ago, my apple tree probably had 80 apples, and this year I have one apple.
Uh-huh.
I was just wondering, what's happening?
So how old is the tree?
It was given to me, and it's espaliered, so I'm not really sure how old it is. Probably, my guess would be 4 or 5 years old, maybe.
Okay. And did you do anything different to it this year? I mean, as far as watering or fertilizing or anything like that?
The only thing I can think of is that my neighbor had a water leak that area became really wet for a while before we realized it was really swampy. Uh-huh. So it may have gotten just like a ton of water for a month or so that I wasn't aware of.
What month or so, what would that have been?
What would it have been?
Spring, summer?
Spring, I think, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know,
spring.
Okay, spring, of course, did it have a lot of blossoms on it or any blossoms on it?
No.
No? Well, I would venture to say that it was probably suffering from too much water and didn't blossom out. And, you know, too much water does that. If it was a swamp or very, very wet, like you say, that would be detrimental to the tree. And because if you never watered it again, it would probably do real well. I mean, that's how tough they are.
Right.
Yeah. And but how's your fertilizing program? Do you fertilize it much?
I haven't done anything.
Okay.
So
well, I'll tell you what. About, you know, 1st of February coming up, get some fruit tree or vegetable fertilizer and give it a handful or two around the base. Don't touch the trunk with it, but just kind of scatter it around the base and let the rain work it in over time. But don't water it at all. Leave it alone. Ignore it. And see, and last year I noticed that there was not the apple crop that I have seen in the past. And I'm wondering if there were not enough bees out doing pollinating or what exactly was happening that I have some small apple trees and they did okay. They've only been in the ground maybe three years, something like that, and they did okay, but not what I thought they would do. And then at the nursery I have apple trees, of course, in pots, and there was a line of them and about five or six of them in the line of the same type, and one of them had, oh gosh, maybe 10 apples on it, and this is a young tree, 10 apples on it, and the rest of the line had none. So, you know, it's hard to say. I don't know, you know, what would have caused that. So nature being nature, okay. and maybe, like I say, too much water, not enough bees out pollinizing. It's good to keep an eye on it, and like I say, do the fertilizing thing in February and maybe again in April, and but don't kill it with water and see if it improves.
Okay, I will do that. Thank you.
You're welcome. Thank you for the call.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Mm-hmm. All right, 4:26, and we're ready for you on a phone call or two.
Oh, me?
Everybody.
Can I talk now?
Sure. It's got your name on it.
I guess. Oh, gosh. But as I was saying earlier on how tough they were, and I was trying to reiterate that to the lady just called, they grow in the desert. They grow in Southern California. I mean, you know, they grow in Washington. They grow in Alaska. There are varieties of apples that grow very well in Alaska, and that's probably one of the, you know, colder, harsher, rainier climates that, you know, you could have in comparison to where we are. We're like in the Garden of Eden down here as far as spring and
the
rain.
The four seasons.
Yeah, the four season kind of thing. And so that's how versatile they are, and that's how tough they are. So it's a good tree to start with. It's a good tree to, you know, get your feet into the orchard business there and say, well, if I can do that with this, maybe I can, you know, as you
graduate
progress,
to
you,
cherry
yeah,
or whatever.
Cherries and pears and well, plums are pretty easy too. They're almost like a weed for crying
out
loud.
Is
that right? Yeah, they grow wild everywhere for crying out loud. But when they're established, they'll grow a lot of fruit. That's all there is to it. I've taken, you know, and many, like I said, many varieties, and I didn't list them, but they do well in Alaska, and again, in the desert, and they've got them in Bend, they've got them in, you know, on the coast. Now, on the coast, they may not do as well simply because it never gets real, real warm. It could probably be a long time when they ripen. The ripening season over here might happen in, say, August, September, where on the coast it might be October or November, simply because of the temperature difference between the two places, and they get, of course, more rain and wind and that kind of thing.
Yeah.
So it's probably not the optimum place to grow apple trees or any fruit trees, but I'm sure there are orchards just inland, you know, a few miles from the coast, but that's how versatile they are. And like I say, in Douglas County, we've got many, many acres of apple orchards, and they're all very productive. And we almost have a perfect climate for them. And if you drive around in Garden Valley, you can see Cruz Farms, you know, they have orchards. There's other orchards out and around. Out in Winston, there's quite a few orchards out Happy Valley, out 10 Mile, even out in Camas, there are some apple orchards, and they all do well. And like I say, the ones I planted, my son planted up on the mountain there, no care apples, and they still had apples. They weren't real, you know, good looking,
delicious.
I can hardly wait to bite into them apples, but they were alive and they were producing.
They weren't like the Garden of Eden.
No, there wasn't no serpents wrapped around them. But some of the most popular ones that do real well here in Southern Oregon, Golden Delicious, and Golden Delicious is also probably one of the main pollinators, because there are certain apples that need another tree to cross pollinate. You know?
Oh, okay.
And Golden Delicious or Yellow Delicious, whatever you want to call it, same tree. That's one of the main pollinizers. And then you've got and Yellow Delicious is a cooking apple. You know, you can eat it, sure, but that's apple pies and apple cobbler.
Or the Yellow Delicious.
And that's what they people like that to bake with. That's good. But Red Delicious is its first cousin, only it's red. And that's the crisp eating type apple. And then you got Fuji and Honey Crisp, which is a fairly new one.
Honey Crisp are the ones I like.
It's fairly new on the market in the last couple, 3 years. And there's Gala and Granny Smith, and the list goes on. I think I said I counted 42 varieties.
Jeez.
Either 22 or 42 varieties, I can't remember. And, you know, they're all good for here. Of course, we don't carry that many varieties at our nursery. We'll have maybe five different varieties that we know they do well here in Douglas County, where you won't have any problems with them. But, you know, it's when you're considering apple trees or any other fruit tree, you know, for your yard, it's wise to stick with what's proven. That works here in Douglas County. So, you know, like I say, five, maybe there's 10 varieties that do really, really well, and you won't have any problems. But like I said Yellow Delicious is a main pollinizer for all the other varieties. Because a lot of varieties, they need another tree and bees to come in, because Yellow Delicious blooms a lot for a long time, so it attracts bees for a long time.
So it's a continuum.
Yeah, it's kind of a continuum. And it is a very long bloom season. So and then because of that, it has a heavy pollen production. This is what makes it a great pollinator for the other varieties, who are sometimes 2 weeks behind, maybe. Well, and their flowers come out 2 weeks behind, but the Yellow Delicious is still blooming. Mm-hmm. So the bees are on the Yellow Delicious, and they go over to the Mount Fuji or the Gala apple and cross-pollinate that way. So it's good. And you know, Yellow Delicious is like a medium to large size apple, not super large, but, you know, fairly good size, and has, you know, clear yellow color, hence the name. Yellow delicious. And it's crisp. It's a good, you bite, you know, if you're going to eat it and you bite into it, it's very crisp, juicy, good for eating and cooking. And so that's that might be your first apple you want to plant, just to kind of establish it and see, hey, is this going to work? Is my yard big enough to handle this? And I'm talking about semi-dwarf type apples, that not the standard kind that most orchards have, but the smaller growing varieties, which are semi-dwarf. Then there's dwarf, and I'll talk about that a little bit later.
Okay.
But once you get that established, then you can plant any other apple you want in the same locale, you know, within the same acre, if you got that much of a yard.
That's a pretty big
yard. That'd be a big yard, lot to mow over there, man.
Yeah.
But, you know, then Red Delicious, like I said, it's another favorite in our area because it does so well. And it's different, and it's primarily a crisp eating apple. I guess you could cook with it, but it normally is not used in cooking. It's basically you cut up an apple and have it for lunch, or, mm-hmm. you know, I don't do that, but... I know people that do.
You should. It's good for you, they tell you.
Oh, I know. Thank you for telling me that. I've heard that before.
Oh.
My wife tells me that. Oh. You should have some apple.
What are your apples?
What do I got to do that for? Where's my burger?
Yeah.
You know, but my wife's favorite is the Honeycrisp. And like I said, it's kind of a new apple,
mm-hmm.
New in the last 2-3 years. And it's good apple. I like that. It, you know, it's from time to time I do have apples.
A little spindier than the others. Well, a little bit.
A little bit, not much, though.
Yeah.
And it ripens about mid-season, and it's like red, firm, crisp, and very sweet.
Mm-hmm.
Very
yeah,
sweet,
it is
tart sweet. I was trying to envision what is sweet and tart in the same bite. I'm not sure, but that's what the book said. And
it's
a good
combination.
Yeah,
whatever it is.
Yeah, and it's very very hardy, and it originated in Minnesota.
Oh really?
Yeah, that's where it come from. That's where they hybridized it and developed it in Minnesota. And like anything else, you know, it just kind of goes out.
Yeah.
Out and around to the rest of the world there.
Including China.
Mm-hmm. Granny Smith apples actually came to the USA from Australia. That was the Australian apple. That was one of their main apples. And so one of our plant scientists or whoever, yeah. I guess, brought some back a long time ago, or we did some trading. But it's... It came from Australia.
Got her going.
Yeah, it's a mid-season apple. It's large, it's firm, and it's tart. I don't know if there's any sweetness in there at all, but it's tart. And color-wise, it's a kind of a yellowish-green, and it makes great applesauce and great apple pies. A
lot of cinnamon in there. Yeah.
Yeah, you betcha.
Love it.
You betcha.
Gotta take a break.
Okay, we'll take a break. Get back to the apples.
Back, more apple talk.
Apples, plums, peaches, pears, bananas, you know what the heck.
There you go. It sounds like a song back in the 60s.
Hey, why don't we sing it?
News Radio 1240 KQEN, and the phones are open if you got a question.
673-4464.
All right.
This is KQEN Local Talk at 4 on News Radio 1240 KQEN.
Hello, once again, we're back with Mike Winters, Lawn and Garden Show on a Wednesday. We're talking apples
and
fruit
trees.
Well,
we're talking fruit trees, apples, and things like that because, you know, it's time to think about stuff like that as we go into the fall. And I actually have more than apples on my agenda today, but we'll see how that all goes. But as I said earlier, you know, apples are very easy to grow, and they're just they're a tough tree, and they're going to do well in any good draining soil. And a lady that called earlier told me about the wetness and the leak in the pipe from her neighbor, and wanted to know if that might have caused damage to the tree. And I pretty much think it didn't kill it, but it does, it does alter its growth habit, and if there are rotten roots maybe that can't let the tree function normally, that would have something to do with the blooming process and the growth process and how it leafed out and all that kind of thing. So they are tough. They, you know, when they're young, when you first plant them, you know, summer watering is important, say, for the first 2 years. And it's not like every day or every week. It's like maybe if it's real hot, maybe twice a month at most. Maybe once a month, depending on the type of ground that you have. And you can tell if they need water, the leaves are going to be limp and hanging downwards. And if it has sufficient water and food, the leaves will be, you know, out and stretched out and away from the branch, not drooping. And when it's drooping, it needs water. When it's not drooping, leave it alone. That's your best. That's your best indicator, and you can tell in a hot minute. And you know, then fertilizing when they're young, while they're developing their root system. Usually, I fertilize mine at least once a year, but sometimes I mess up and do it twice a year just to kind of force some more growth out of them. And I do it in early spring being, say, February, while it's still raining, so that the rain can break the fertilizer, it's granular food, and it can break the granular food down, and as the water goes down into the ground and you've got the fertilizer that's feeding the roots over, say, a 5 to 6 week period. That doesn't just suck in all the fertilizer all at once. It's a process. And as the spring develops and the ground warms up and the tree starts growing, then it begins to use more and more of the available fertilizer that there is. I like to do it a little bit in the fall, just to kind of let the rains work it in. The tree won't necessarily use it. It may take some in and store it, but it's there. It's in the ground. It's available, so that when spring does come, it'll have some that's already at root level. Plus, you've added a little bit more on the top, so for the next 2 months, the new stuff can get in, and you'll see a real difference in your tree. You'll see a lot of good quality growth, and you'll see good fruit as if the bees are out pollinizing the way they should be. And the fertilizer that you want to use, of course, high quality, nothing on sale, you know, and make sure it's high in phosphorus and potassium. On every fertilizer package, there's three numbers, and the first one is always nitrogen, the second one is always phosphorus, and the third one is always potassium. Well, the nitrogen is what really explodes the leaf growth and the overall growth to the tree, but it is not conducive to fruit production, whereas the phosphorus and the potassium, that's what promotes root growth and fruiting and flowering, and that's the kind of a balance you want. But when you're looking for an agricultural type fertilizer, it'll say right on the bag, garden fertilizer for all your fruits and vegetables and that kind of thing. It'll say that, and you can read the back of it and say that, and it'll say this and this and this and this, and it will work good on this and this and this. But you don't want to put a lawn food on there, which is like, you know, 25% nitrogen and 10% phosphorus and 5% potassium. That's the opposite of what you want to achieve. Now, pruning your new trees is important for good fruit production. You know, prune to direct your growth horizontally. You don't want the stuff to grow straight up. You don't want branches to go straight up into the air. They might look healthy, and it might look like, oh man, look at that tree. It's really grown. It's eight feet tall. It's 10 feet tall, and it's only been in the ground for 2 years. Well, yeah, that's not necessary. You want that horizontal spread, because that's where your fruit production is going to be. So when a client calls me and say, I'm not getting as much fruit or blah, 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 I correct the pruning technique and tell them why. We got a call?
We do.
Okay, I'm ready.
All right. Still hanging in there? You're on the Mike Winters Lawn and Garden Show.
Hey, Mike, this is John. I love what you're doing. I love hearing you talk. I love hearing you share.
Well, good. Thanks for listening, John.
I was on another phone call when you talked to the woman about the drainage coming across her tree.
Yeah.
This is what I've done. I have done a double perimeter drain. I've dug drains to give the place for water to get away from the tree.
Good.
To drain out of such a situation, to intercept it and get it away. And it looks like they take off really good.
They
what
do.
Do you think?
You're absolutely right. And and anytime you see anything like that with standing water, if I'm at some client's house and I can see those kinds of things, that's the advice I give them. You want to get that water away from the tree.
Just give the water somewhere to go.
Yeah, and because there's enough in the ground as it is, and especially if they got an irrigation system, because oftentimes in the irrigation system, it's coming on every other day or something like that, and then that's way too much water. Not necessary at all.
And for something like that, I would be running a drip system on it.
I don't even do that. I drag a bucket up there and give them a shot of water.
Well, you don't need to, do you? You don't need to, do you, Mike?
No. No.
Really. The thing is, the thing's watered good for the rest of the year.
Yep, it is. Yeah.
You're my hero. Thank you so much, Mike.
Well, thank you for listening, John. Appreciate the call.
Take care, sir.
Bye-bye.
Thank you.
All right. 446.
446 already, and I'm still in the Apple world. And that's not computers I'm talking about. That's food.
The good stuff.
Yeah. But I was talking about the pruning. Oftentimes when people who are not familiar about growth and fruit production, they'll look at a tree and say, gee whiz, it's grown 2 feet taller than it did last year, and the year before grew another 2 feet, and now it's 10 feet tall. Well, then if it does grow any apples, it won't grow it on the new growth way up there. It's going to grow it on the old bearing wood, the wood that's over a year old that has hardened up. And consequently, if you've got too many upright branches because it's growing so fast and you're taking such good care of it, it will continue to push for new growth rather than fruit production. They grow better fruit when they are stressed. And you stress them by, number one, not watering as much. But number two, you prune all that new lush top green stuff out of there and prune horizontally. And you thin it out at the same time. There's always a lot of little tiny branches and twigs.
Aren't those suckers?
Suckers. Suckers are usually what comes up from the trunk on the bottom.
Okay.
But they can be construed as suckers too in the red branching pattern.
Yeah.
But you want to eliminate all that little stuff and keep the good hardy branches, but shorten them down. Cut them down so that when you cut something that's going straight up and there's buds right underneath it, when the growth period starts, those buds won't go up. They'll go sideways. They will go horizontally. And that's what you want to do is develop a horizontal branching pattern, and that's where the best fruit's going to be. That's where the only fruit is really going to be on the old bearing spurs. And if you keep a tree pruned, and you should do that, once you start the process, you should do it every year. And you'll have barrels and barrels of apples or peaches or whatever.
Whatever.
And again, I've stressed this a number of times, is in the pruning season, December, January, February, whenever, go out and take a ride through Garden Valley and like where Cruz Farms is and where Singleton Park is down there opposite of Fisher Road. In that area, go down there and take a look at those orchards and see what those people are doing to their orchards. And to the novice, it would look like, well, you're ruining the tree. No, they're not ruining the tree. They're making that tree more productive. And you can go it in a haphazard way and just chop stuff, or you can get good and make it look good at the same time. It doesn't have to be a messy job, but you just want to, like I say, create horizontal branching. I've got a client out here and out in Melrose that when he called me a few months back and said he just bought a new house, and he said, hey, I don't know anything about this. He's from San Francisco area, out there, escaped, came here. And he says, I got this orchard, but I'm not getting much fruit from it. Oh. So, and he had a lot of other things. His sprinkler system wasn't working. And so we, my brother Steve fixed that. And I'm looking at this orchard that he has. Well, the trees were only about 6 or 7 feet apart.
Oh,
and the branches were intermingled, mm-hmm. and it was in
what
this
a mess.
Yeah, it was. It was like 10 trees in an area that was 25 feet long by 9 feet wide, 10 feet wide maybe. I mean, when they planted them, the homeowners, they were small trees.
Sure.
Oh, that was plenty of space. But you got to think, what's that tree going to look like in 10 years or 5 years? You know, that kind of thing.
The puppies grow up.
And I said basically. If what I would do, and I always tell clients what I would do if that were mine, mm-hmm. is I would cut out every other tree and give it some space. And now they're about 15 feet apart, and I said clean out some of those extra branches. See how thick all those branches are. Take about 50% of them out.
Yeah.
And he did that too. And the trees, when I saw them about a week or so ago, they look good. Now there's another step. As soon as they really go dormant, I'll show you how to top them, and then when we top them again, we'll begin to do that horizontal growth, so mm-hmm. that next year you're gonna have some real fruit. I mean, they had a few apples and a few cherries on them but not much, because there was so many leaves, there was no room for cherries
too
to grow.
Too much competition.
There was no sunlight that could get in there and ripen the fruit. So consequently, a lot of it just fell on the ground and died.
Rotted, not died.
But, you know.
Yeah.
So at any rate.
Break. And lines are still open, by the way.
Yes.
541-673-4464. On the Mike Winters Lawn and Garden Show here on News Radio 1240 KQEN.
This is KQEN Local Talk at 4 on News Radio 1240 KQEN.
All right, let's get right back to our show here. News Radio 1240 KQEN. Good afternoon. You're on the air with Mike Winters.
I'd like to reseed my lawn this fall.
Okay.
Is it too late?
Oh, gosh, no. It's not even ready. Well, you could. Do you have irrigation?
Yes.
Okay. Is there grass existing there now?
I have a lawn that's been there for about 25, 30 years.
Uh-huh.
And this summer, I had a lot of weeds, and so I went out about 3 weeks ago and sprayed Roundup and killed all my weeds off, and so I got a lot of brown spots, and I got some green area.
Okay,
and
well,
I just thought I would reseed the whole thing.
Well, good. Do it. In the bare spots, go ahead and put the seed in there, you know, fairly thickly, and cover it with peat moss, or you know, maybe just cover it so the birds don't eat it, and then the rest of the lawn, as you walk through and broadcast the seed, it'll fall down in between the blades of grass and sit there, and then as soon as you get it all seeded, make sure you fertilize it with a good lawn fertilizer, and then turn on the water for. Oh, gosh, if you go sprinkler system, turn it on for about 15, 20 minutes every other day.
Do I use a starter fertilizer or just a regular lawn?
A regular lawn food. I mean, the starter fertilizers, I've used them experimentally, and they're not as good as your normal. All of our new lawns, whether they're seed or sod, we use a full-time fertilizer lawn food on it. We don't use the starter stuff.
Okay, great.
And just keep it damp, and then if it rains, you know, cut your sprinkler and it's good to go. It should be up. In this kind of weather, it'll probably come up in about 5 days.
Well, I'll go out and mow the lawn tomorrow and get her nice and short and do that.
Okay.
So thank you.
You're sure welcome. Call back, tell me the results.
I will do that.
All right. Thank you.
Bye.
Bye-bye. All right.
How much time I got?
We have a couple of minutes.
Couple of minutes. Well, maybe I can wrap this up with the fruit tree thing here. And again, people are for the most part, not everybody, but a lot of folks are hesitant about pruning. They think they're going to hurt the tree.
Right.
They're not going to hurt the tree. I've said it 1,000 times, I think, in the last 20 years now. And it's like cutting your fingernails. Your fingers don't fall off. They just look better. Mm. And the same thing with pruning a tree. You get all the junk out, and you give it some room to grow, and
voila, baby.
Voila, you're looking good. And I have over the years experimented in pruning just to see if I could damage or kill a tree or a shrub by pruning it too much. Mm-hmm. And I did it with my own stuff. I didn't do it with my client's stuff. But if you prune it right, you'll never have to use a ladder. You can pick your fruit right from the ground standing there. It was probably a 15-foot apple tree, and it had four different, it was a grafted apple tree. It had been in the ground probably 25 or 30 years, and it was maybe 15 to 18 feet tall, but, you know, the fruit was not heavy or anything like that because there were way too many branches, leaves, et cetera. So I just whacked it. I whacked it down about 5 feet. There was three different types of apples grafted into the main stem, and they came out sideways, and then they went up. So I cut everything that went up, I cut it off. And I had these three bare branches going in three different directions, about 5 to 6 feet tall, you know, about eyeball level, and they went out about 8 feet, say, from the tree. And people that saw it said, "What did you do to that tree?" I said, "I pruned it." "What do you mean, what did I do to it?"
I fixed it.
And the next year, the next spring, when Aprilish came around and the buds, all the little buds, the flower buds, were like in a line along all these branches. And there was three different apples on this tree. And they were all lined up, and I thought, pretty good. And then there was little branches trying to go up. I cut them off again. They weren't very big. It didn't take very long. But that year, all my apples were eyeball high. I didn't need a box. I didn't need a ladder. I didn't need anything. They were all at eye level. Nice. And they were right along the stems. It looked like the coolest tree you ever saw. Oh, it looked like a decorated apple tree, because there was I think a red variety, a yellow variety, and a green variety, and so they looked like ornaments hanging on there.
Yeah,
and they and just go along and pick them, and they were beautiful fruit because they had so much sunlight, air circulation. Mm-hmm. They were out in the open, and I didn't have to sweat the program. They were good to go.
You're all ready to roll.
Yeah. Are you ready to roll?
Yes.
Okay.
There we go.
Good timing.
Yeah.
I'll do cherry trees and pear trees next week. And they're a little different, but same basic principles. And
same,
I'll tell you about it.
Yeah, same type of thing.
Yeah.
Where are you located in Winston, Mike?
We are about a half mile south of Winston on Highway 99. Look for the big green roofs, and that's us. And we got signs out there that even says Wintergreen Nursery.
Nice.
Yeah, thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks for listening.